Good Morning Football is a production of the NFL in partnership with iHeartRadio.
Good Morning Football!
GMFB presented by Old Trapper Beef Jerky. We're live in a cozy studio. You were not last night. You were in a cold, blistering, windy.
I was in a cozy booth after I was standing on the field for a while, but it wasn't too bad.
Before or after, you shook up the snow globe that was Buffalo. Hall of Famer Kurt Warner is with us. He was at the game calling it. We have Peter Schrager. We have Kyle Brandt. My name is Kay Adams. Yes, Old Trapper Beef Jerky sponsoring this show that begins with highlights.
A really memorable, historic game. Because look at the stats. Mac Jones, 2 or 3, 19 yards. Patriots, 14-10 to get to 9-4. And afterwards, the rookie quarterback said crazy, and he said weird.
Yeah, it was just a crazy game to be a part of. But we knew if we didn't turn the ball over, we'd be good. So it was just a weird day. But at the end of the day, you just get more points than the other team, and it's a great day. Hats off to the offensive line for doing what they did, knowing that we're going to run the ball. And just putting their nose in there every play and making it happen was incredible. I've never been a part of something like that, so that was really cool.
He hadn't even seen snow for a long time in his life. The Patriots, with the win, stay in the number one seed in the AFC. The Bills drop down to the seventh seed, the final wild card spot. An odd, unconventional, nice win, to say the least. 3 pass attempts from that guy, Mac Jones, Matt Judon said. He's just out there controlling the ball, joking, which means they're a nice, cohesive team, and they're all moving in the same direction, which is what I love. What did we learn from this Patriots squad, Kurt, in Buffalo last night that you saw with your very eyes?
That's funny, Mac Jones. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah.
I mean, like, was it really as a quarterback? Was that really cool to win a game with 3 pass attempts? Here's the thing is, I want to say that I learned something in this game, but I'm not sure that I did. Coming into this game, what did I think? I thought the Patriots, the more physical team, that if it came down to who was going to win the line of scrimmage, the Patriots were going to win the line of scrimmage, that the Buffalo Bills are more, I don't know if you want to call them a finesse team, but they're a pass team. They're a team that wins by throwing the football. Josh Allen, his big arm, Stephon Diggs making those big plays. And in a game where you can't do that, and the wind and the conditions don't allow you to do that, am I surprised that the Patriots went out and dominated the line of scrimmage on both sides and won this football game the way that they did? I'm not really surprised. And, you know, it's one of those tough situations because Buffalo is going to play in Buffalo. They're going to play in these conditions. But they're not necessarily built to play in these conditions like that the Patriots are.
It's a statement that I think is reverberating up in Western New York right now, because it's almost like, don't look at the elephant in the room, that maybe this Bills team, you don't want to go up to Buffalo in cold weather. Maybe they're not built for that. And that's what this does, this game. It's demoralizing. To win that way, it's such a style point. It's the Bills saying, we're ready for this. And then the Patriots saying, not only are you not ready for this, we're going to embarrass you. That was an embarrassing stat line from Mac Jones, that they thought that they can win a game with just having 3 pass attempts. And they did. To me, waking up in Buffalo this morning, you have to feel like so frustrated. And McDermott, I've never seen him like this after the game. He was saying, this wasn't a Belichick game. Stop with the Belichick game. Like, we had opportunities. They had one long. It's demoralizing. It's soul crushing. It's, you're not ready for this. We're built for that. You're not built for this. That's what I take away from this. Look at Mac Jones's first 4 drives. Like, this is what the Patriots did on offense, and it was from the go. Like, we are not going to throw. You know exactly what we're going to do. You have to stop us, and we think we can win playing with our arm tied behind our back, our feet, you know, tied together, and we still can beat you because we're just going to be tougher and stronger than you. There was a meme going around yesterday from Patriots fans. It was basically like, the only tough Bill in Buffalo tonight. And that is the stuff that hits deep, and they're going to play him again, and they're going to get an opportunity. But when you've got Bills fans tweeting the Pegula family saying, like, hey, maybe we should get a dome. Like, what's the point of this? That's what I come away from this thing.
And as I was calling the game, and you showed the big run by Harris there early on, and you call the game, and once they got that big run, and then they couldn't kick because they were going into the win, and they get the 2-point conversion, you're just saying to yourself, I mean, I remember saying to myself, are the Patriots going to pass it? I didn't know if they were going to, because get 8 points on the board. So it's obviously at least a touchdown and 2-point conversion, or possibly 2 scores. And you knew the Patriots were just going to say, show us. Show us that you can drive the football and put points on the board. And it played right into their hands. That one big play, to me, was the difference maker in this game.
I hear you. And if you're not really understanding, games are in wind all the time.
This is a different deal. There's two tassels on top of the uprights. One of them blew off. There was only one tassel. It just blew off. Did you see the opening kickoff? This will explain to you the whole deal here. So the Patriots, just track this kick. It's not a penalty. It's a standard thing. Tyler Bass kicks it. And watch this thing. It goes careening, not into the first row, into the seventh row, into somebody in a Gabriel Davis jersey. That was the point of this thing. And, Peter, I think you're all on it. Sensitivity right now with Buffalo. Real sensitive, real frosty after the game, not only with McDermott. So Jordan Poyer and Micah Hyde had a long day. They're the safeties for the Buffalo Bills. They have to tackle those Patriots running backs and all those rushing attempts. And sure enough, a reporter, I don't think it was Peter, asked these two safeties after the game. They threw three times. Was that embarrassing for you? Watch how this went.
I mean, what kind of question?
Boy, what are we doing, bro?
What kind of question is that? I mean, they got good backs. They kept coming back to a couple runs. I mean, I don't know how you want us to answer that question.
That's funny. We'll remember that. I'll remember that.
Micah, that's an issue for this defense.
You asked me that last time. They ran the ball how many times?
46
times. Yeah, do I think that's an issue for this team, for this defense? No, I do not.
This goes in disrespect. It's all about respect. I come here every single week and I answer your questions truthfully, honestly. I appreciate you guys. Don't do that.
In my day, players answer that kind of question.
So those guys are tough. They played okay. They had 46 runs against them, and they are tough. The Patriots were tougher. The Bills are tough. The Patriots are tougher. And it's kind of what you're saying, Kurt. I think the frustration here is, what are we supposed to do? There's no like, well, we messed this up. The Bills had a turnover. The Patriots had a turnover. I don't know how to fix this. Right. We played in the winter. We're going to play in the winter for the rest of our season. And the other team was emphatically better than us. And I don't know what we're supposed to do about this. It's not like our game plan was bad. No, the other team was better and the other team was tougher. And I don't know how to solve this. That's the frustration.
You're having so many thoughts at the breakfast table. We'll be sharing them all 3 hours, of course. Some of mine were the N'Keal Harry muffed punt, just seeing him back there. I was like, why is he back there? That was weird. That was odd. I didn't think that would happen. And then, of course, Twitter gets all over him because it was, you know, a bad situation. But I sort of started thinking about N'Keal Harry, and I'm like, what's going on with him? He's obviously a first-round draft pick. He was disgruntled. He was demanding a trade, like, before the season started. To see him out there, he was part of two critical plays that got the Patriots the win, and that's buy-in. He's out there blocking. It was incredible. I'm sure you saw this, Kurt, out there. One of the biggest plays in the game. You brought it up, that big run, right? Damian Harris, 64-yard run. He's out there blocking a defensive end. He's clear in the path. He does the exact same thing on Brandon Bolden's two-point conversion after that. These are two crucial plays that he's out there. And if he's disgruntled and he's not buying and he's not moving in the same direction as this egoless team, which I love, this Patriots squad and how they're playing and doing things as they always have under Bill Belichick, there's no sulking, there's no complaining. Mac Jones is not mad that he threw the ball three times. And this just shows, this N'Keal Harry is just like a little sample. I know everyone's bouncing and jumping on N'Keal Harry, and I get the other players they could have had, and you know they maybe made a bad draft choice. I get it, but the fact that he's out there, the fact that Devin McCourty's out there saying this is why I love playing for this team, his direct quote: "I love playing here at this team. Isn't about one person. Isn't about ego. It's about winning." And just even just that, him going out there blocking his ass off in those conditions on that team, I loved seeing it.
I mean, you love that part of the team because especially in this day and age for wide receivers, and I've said it about the Ravens as well, when you go to certain places, you got to go, okay, I'm not going to get 12 targets. No. I'm not going to get 10 catches. They're not going to throw me 5 wide receiver screens a game. I've got a role here, and the role is to help my team win and do the little things. And that's what you have to do when you go to New England because they're going to do what they need to do to win. And if that's Mac Jones handing the ball off 46 times, that's what you're going to do.
It takes a rookie quarterback to be egoless to say, let's go.
But, hey, you win 7 straight, and teams are talking about you as a possible team to win a championship. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about, and you play that role. But you love it when you have unselfish guys like that.
And the whole team seems to be that way, and they're moving forward in the same direction. Mike Garofolo will be talking about this game, of course, all show long. Kurt Warner is here. We've got a fun one. The Manning brothers are hanging out with us. Peyton Manning, Eli Manning joining our show today. Mike, let's check in on the NFC East, though. Will the Giants have Daniel Jones this weekend? What is the latest with Washington tight end Logan Thomas?
Yeah, before I get to that, I just got the rundown for the 9 o'clock hour. 9A, Peyton Manning. 9C, Eli Manning. 9B, this guy. How about that? smack in the middle of the Mannings here. It's like a Manning cast. Oh, it's like I'm a guest on the Manning cast. Me and David Letterman.
You're not.
You asked me about a different. You asked me about a different Giants quarterback. One that Lawrence Taylor apparently has never heard of. That's Daniel Jones. He went to see doctors. The team is out in Arizona between games. They're playing the Chargers this Sunday, which is not great for them considering their quarterback situation. Daniel Jones still not cleared for contact. Our Ian Rappaport had told you last week that it was likely that Jones was going to miss multiple games, so it looks like that's going to be the case. Now, the problem is Mike Glennon is in the concussion protocol. They're hopeful he'll be cleared before Sunday, but who knows when it comes to concussions. So Jake Fromm right now, Lawrence Taylor definitely hasn't heard of Jake Fromm. He is in line right now to be the starter. And the cherry on top of all this is Jerry Schulpinski, the team's quarterbacks coach. He's out because of a positive COVID test. So not great for the Giants at the court. Kurt, what are you doing this weekend? Kurt, they may need you. Logan Thomas, you asked me about staying in the NFC East, the Washington football tight end. The team thought on Sunday that he had torn his ACL, but got better news than they expected. That's what Ron Rivera said. They are still going through the evaluations, but it looks like he did not tear his ACL, so that's great news. Now, there is damage in his knee. The MCL was affected as well, so Thomas is going to miss some time. We'll see if he returns before the end of the season, but no tear in the ACL because of this hit from Yannick Ngakoue, and Rivera said he thought that that was avoidable. He said you would like to see the player use his hands instead of going low like that, but all in all, good news for Logan Thomas and the Washington football team on Monday.
Love hearing that. Thank you so much. Kurt Warner is unavailable, I'm told. His agent just told me he's promoting his movie, American Underdog, which is in theaters everywhere on Christmas Day. We'll have Zachary Levi on the show, who plays Kurt Warner today. Also, somewhere in that Peyton Manning, Mike Garofalo, Eli Manning sandwich that we have coming on the show today.
This is it. If the Ravens convert, they win. If they fail, the Steelers win. Jackson takes a snap, fakes the handoff, lobs it, juggled and dropped by Mark Andrews, who was wide open at the one. Perfect play execution until the pass. Oh, it couldn't have been more open.
That was the scene on Sunday when the Ravens lost to the Steelers 20-19 after going for it and having a failed two-point conversion attempt with no time left. Baltimore left Pittsburgh, and linebacker T.J. Watt left there with 3.5 more sacks and was the best player on the field. Watt was incredible, and he added to his total of 16 for the season. And when he's on the field, the Steelers seem to win. When he's not, they don't. Which leads to our next segment that we call We In or We Out. Right. And I say a statement. Sometimes it's outlandish. Sometimes it's way outside the box. Sometimes it's right on the money. Mm. You three tell me if you agree or you disagree. Following Sunday's game and in a season where there hasn't been one player to grasp the award, the statement is thus. Mm-hmm. T.J. Watt, and not an offensive player,
ooh,
is the league's MVP through the first 13 games of the season. Kyle, are we in or are we out?
I wish we had an award that was best player, because that's much different than most value. You just give it to the best player, and Aaron Donald would have won a lot, and TJ would have won it this year. But I'm out on this, unfortunately, because I like some value with my most valuable player, and I'm really big on if you took the player off the team falls apart. Sometimes it doesn't happen. Like, Kyler Murray's been great, but Colt McCoy came in and was fine. I think the most valuable player this year is Aaron Rodgers, and I really do. Not only how he's played, but based on how they looked against Kansas City. And I have a feeling that Aaron Rodgers could have 500 yards and 6 touchdowns every single game for the rest of the way, and he's not going to win MVP based on off-the-field things and based on voter prejudice and voter judging and things like that. So I think it's going to be very interesting.
It is an interesting take before we get to, because the media votes for this.
Yeah.
And the media was obviously very upset with how the COVID thing was handled, also how the offseason was handled. Mm-hmm. You think that will come into play? If Rodgers finishes the season, he's clearly the best player. Objectively, he will not win the MVP?
100%. I think it's the same thing as Hall of Fame, same thing as MVP. It's the same deal. And I don't even know if he needed the COVID stuff. Last summer alone might have pissed enough people off, but I still think he's the most valuable.
How'd they do without him on the field?
Terrible. They lost to the Chiefs, and, and Jordan Love couldn't do anything.
Yeah,
that's how valuable he is.
Yeah.
But don't you have to also see who the backup is? I mean, when we talk about that and we say, take that guy off the team, we could do that for every great quarterback on every team. And I know the Cardinals won.
Yeah.
Colt McCoy is not Jordan Love. I mean, he's a guy that's played,
significantly better,
kept the seat
took
warm.
Took Tom Brady off the Patriots. They're doing pretty well, right?
They're doing pretty well. Take him off the Bucks. I'm not sure how they're doing.
I know.
You know, at this
we'll
point
see
in time.
The separation of the quarterback at the right. end of the day, right?
Yeah.
That's what it's going to come to. Like, what's the difference between him and Tom Brady as far as numbers, as far as value, to your point? I will quickly say no. The last I looked at the history of this, of course, the last defensive player to win the award was Lawrence Taylor, 20 and a half sacks. The Giants, more importantly than that, they were 14-2 that year. We all know they went on to win the Super Bowl. We do a segment, Kurt, every week where we go over the best touchdown dances in the NFL. And the guys get so mad when there's even a guy on there. If the team lost, they don't want him on there.
That's
so
true.
You guys get so mad at that. So do not bring up T.J. Watt on a Steelers team that's not in the playoff picture right now. Can't do it yet.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, and I say we out, but it's kind of like Aiden Hutchinson at the Hall of Fame. You know, you invite him. You know that the defense. You know, he's not going to win it. They're going to give it to an offensive guy. But yeah, T.J. Watt should be in the conversation. And what I love about T.J. Watt is that when there's a big play that needs to be made, when there's a moment where you need to make that play, he's that guy that always seems that Seattle game when they're playing and late in that
Sunday
game.
Sunday night, yep.
Geno Smith, and what do they need? They need a strip sack. They get a strip sack. You know, in the game the other night, every time they needed a play, he was the one that was around Lamar Jackson, including that two-point conversion. So he's got those Heisman MVP-type moments. Come on. We're not giving it to a defense.
Can I extend the Kurt's analogy? You know, Charles Woodson wins the Heisman on defense.
Yes,
however, special teams, offense, like, I'm not even joking. It's almost like if T.J. Watt would play some tight end in the goal line, like, that would actually help. He's just a pass rusher, and it's tough to beat the quarterbacks.
True. Everyone's grasping for the guy. It was Derrick Henry at one point, then it was Jonathan. And, like, it might just be Brady.
I know.
It might just be Brady. And he leads the league in all the major statistics right now. And the voters, they like. We learned this with Michael Jordan. They don't like just going the same guy. They like having a little variety.
Give it to Karl Malone 1 year. Why not?
Give it to Charles Barkley.
Yeah, sure.
But I think it might be Brady.
To your point, Kyle, didn't J.J. Watt just a couple years ago where they were making that push for him to be the MVP?
Like
and didn't they? Yeah, they put him
and
over
Jared
tight end.
Did the same
they,
thing.
They threw the fade to him, trying to get him a touchdown to give him a little bit more
but
love.
But they need him to be on a winning team. I think if you're a defensive player.
Yeah, I don't
player,
think there's no
you're
doubt
a defensive
about that.
Player that, you know, no you, have, you have to be dominant as a squad. I ask you, when's the last year or the last time you can remember that it was so up in the air in week 14?
I think
this is like nobody wants to win this thing.
This is the most wide open MVP race I think I've ever been a part of.
Oh.
You know, Matt Ryan's year, he kind of stole it at the end, or at least was finishing up strong at the end. It was going to be him, or maybe it was I don't have any recollection of it going into week. That's being like, we could be 15 different players. Who wants the award? There's five more weeks. Go get it. You know, we'll see.
That's really cool.
It is. A guy who could make an argument is Cooper Kupp.
Go on.
He had 8 catches for 129 yards and a touchdown on Sunday in the win against the Jaguars. He is now the league leader in receptions, in receiving yards, and in receiving touchdowns. He's got the triple crown. And after the win, he caught up with the NFL's Bridget Condon. Take a listen when they asked him about his touchdown reception. Listen to Cooper Kupp discuss this play. Wow.
Went and blitzed. What did you see there? How were you able to use that to your advantage?
Yeah, they just had a little 3-deep fire zone, brought the nickel off the edge, safety dropped down. It didn't look like they were doing a replacement fire zone, so I knew at the back away we were going to get 3 pushing through. That I had an opportunity to kind of run in there if I could beat my guy and just had to beat the safety to the end zone.
And that's not, I mean, that is next level. Kendrick Bourne played at college football, says, he different for
he
real.
For real. Charting up.
That was a lot of football talk, a lot of jargon in a very short amount of time. So let's just transcribe this. Yeah, I just had a little 3-deep fire zone, brought the nickel off the edge, safety dropped down. It didn't look like they were doing a replacement fire zone. So I knew with the back away we were going to get 3 pushing through. Had the opportunity to kind of run. If there, I'd be my guy. I just had to beat the safety in the end zone.
Kurt's got it.
But, yeah, I got it. let's do it. We got a whiteboard. We need to draw this
that
out
is,
for you.
That is some next level football.
Yeah. That was like watching the Squid Game with captions.
That is Squid Game with captions. You know, for the folks who did not play the game, that is not everyday English. So, Kurt Warner, we're going to go to you. And our question is, Cooper Kupp needs his own NFL Network show called Wide Receiver 101, where he explains every route and takes us deep into it and talks like that.
We are in and we are hosting. I will host that show with Cooper Kupp.
You love that talk.
Let's do it. Hour long.
Can I get
3 hours of that?
Replacement fire zone?
Oh, baby. I'm in.
What is a replacement fire zone?
Speaking my language, right? What is that?
What's a replacement fire zone?
Simply means that they're bringing pressure And instead of playing man behind it, they're playing zone. Mm-hmm. And what he's saying is somebody popping out to replace that zone. So he couldn't run through the middle of the field if somebody was mm-hmm. popping out into that zone because the running back was going weak. He was saying that replacement guy had to move to the weak side, opening up the middle of the field. Boom, bang, bing. I'm in the end zone.
So this is, I would subscribe to this show. He can't have a show on his own. Cooper Kupp's everyone's best friend. Jared Goff loves him. Matthew Stafford loves him. Sean McVay loves him. If you're on the show with him and you're the translator and make it so that I can understand and digest it properly, then yes, I'm into this show. But not Cooper Kupp by himself.
Can't do it.
I can't.
He sounds like a Guy Ritchie character, like a bare knuckle boxer. And Fire Zone, I feel like I had my 7-year-old birthday party at Fire Zone. Like,
Fire
this
Zone.
Is so much fun. The only problem I have with the show, Peter, if the guy's name's Cooper Kupp, you need a much better name.
I know.
You need Kupp runneth over, cup of tea. If you put it on late at night, you could have his thoughts on the defense, and it could be D Kupp. And, like, I'd be into that.
Okay.
That's what we need.
I'm like There's this. He's like,
you love this show.
What? Keep talking, Cooper. Keep talking. I love it.
I love it. No, I mean, I'm a football junkie, but obviously.
He's going to binge it, right?
Good stuff.
Watch 12 episodes last night of Cooper Kupp's show.
You should be on the show facilitating it between Cooper and Kerr. I'm actually into that.
I am too.
That is next level football talk, and I appreciate it.
Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, is a 2-time Super Bowl champion, a first ballot Hall of Famer, co-host of the electric Monday Night Football with Peyton and Eli, and the 2005 Walter Payton Man of the Year. Please welcome number 18, Peyton Manning. What's up, Peyton?
Yeah. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
It is great to see you. It is great to have you, especially to talk about this, Peyton. All you've accomplished, all your many, many accolades, I would have to think one of the most prestigious has to be the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award presented by Nationwide. Now, we just saw this year's nominees. These are 32 gentlemen who went way above and beyond for their causes, their communities. Peyton, what did winning this award mean to you?
Well, I know Kirk can tell you as well. It's the NFL's most prestigious award. You guys have seen the NFL Honors Show. They give this award after the MVP of the NFL. Now that Nationwide is honoring all 32 nominees, giving each of these players $40,000 to their charity, the eventual winner gets $250,000. Just the fact that the NFL and Nationwide is recognizing all the good works these guys are doing, that's what's awesome. And I don't think these players are doing the good works in order to try to win an award from Nationwide, but it sure does make a difference when somebody's recognizing the good work that you're doing. And I think because of that, more people are doing more good things.
Yeah, Peyton, so many unbelievable causes by all of these different guys. It's really important to them. As you said, I was a winner of this award, most prestigious award that I ever received. Can you tell me a little bit about how this process goes and how the winner is decided?
Well, it's very competitive. Each team has to put up one player as their nominee, and it's competitive. I mean, the guys on the Broncos are doing great works. The Colts guys are doing great work. So just to get the one player per team is tough. And now we got to pick out of 32 guys that are doing awesome works. I mean, Dak Prescott playing great on the field. He's kicking butt off the field. He's helping out cancer research, suicide prevention, mental health. Andrew Whitworth, you know, big, tough guy on the field, off the field. He's kind of a big teddy bear. He's helping out families in Louisiana, families in L.A. who don't have homes. He's doing great works with Make-A-Wish. So that's just two examples of the great works these guys are doing. So it's a tough choice, I can promise you. But the past winners have been awesome. And like I said, it motivates guys to keep doing good things.
It's so true. NFL.com/Man of the Year. Peyton Manning waking up. Good morning, football. Good to see you, sir. The Walter Payton Man of the Year Charity Challenge is now open. Tell us about it, how it works, and how people at home can get involved.
Yeah, fans can get involved. They can find out the player that's been nominated. They can go to Twitter and mention that player's name. The player whose name gets mentioned the most gets another bonus from Nationwide, I think $25,000. To that winner's charity. So it's just a great way for the fans to get involved with their favorite player, or maybe just a player they appreciate and respect for all the good works they're doing off the field.
It's very cool. Peyton, while we have you, let's talk a little Monday Night Football, shall we? You were great, as always, on the Manning cast. And Kurt Warner was at the game in Buffalo as well. The Patriots, of course, get the win 14-10. And I was fascinated with Kurt saying that if he was a quarterback, he wouldn't be happy with what went down. Three passing attempts, I don't want. That's boring, and I don't like it. I want to know from you, how would you have felt going through an entire game with three pass attempts?
Be honest.
Yeah, probably pretty similar to Kurt. probably not in the best of moods after the game. Certainly happy that you won, but the fact that Mac Jones probably didn't have to shower after the game just tells you a lot. I mean, I thought his handoffs were great. Eli and I were analyzing his throws on the sidelines. That was the only time he actually threw the ball. But it was a classic Bill Belichick game, game management, clock management, protecting the ball at all times, and probably not an air raid as we were kind of hoping before the game, but still a good road division win for the Pats.
Yeah, having watched you and Eli and all the guests all these Monday nights, it feels like you're part of the show, and we get to experience you guys in your living rooms doing it. It's been such a breakthrough in broadcast TV, and the guests are one thing. The actual analysis is what I love, and I think a lot of us at the table do. You guys break it down like no one else does. How rewarding has this season been doing the simulcast, the Manning cast, if you will, with your brother?
Well, it's been a lot of fun. Obviously, the game has been so good to us. We still love the game like Kurt. So for Eli and I to be able to do this together, have fun, talking football. Obviously, we have pretty thick skin. I've become an easy target for a lot of jokes from Eli. I think it's a good that we're separate. We're not in the same room because a couple of things he said, I think, has crossed the line. I probably would reach over to him. The fact that he's already all the way in New Jersey is probably a healthy thing, but it's a lot of fun. All of our guests, the number one criteria is they have to love football, and it's great seeing all these different people in different sports, acting, entertainment, music, that love football. That's a cool thing.
It is a cool thing. I love Peyton talking about how Mac Jones is keeping a low profile as a rookie. And then he says, see, what you have to do is throw 28 interceptions like I did as a rookie. And then you can do all the commercials you want. And we're just laughing along with you, Peyton. It's the best. We'd also be remiss in not bringing this up. You were recently given a highly prestigious position with, quite frankly, a fair amount of responsibility. And that is, of course, Madden ratings adjuster. Ooh. Now, Peyton, you already did some adjustment on Tom Brady's rating. You adjusted him to a 44 overall. So we know you're fair and we know you're objective. We're going to push our luck here and try to do some ratings for us this morning. We're going to get very personal. Peyton, we're going to give you three categories. You give us the Madden rating 0 to 100 for both yourself and your brother, Eli. First up, INT, interview skills. How high do you rate yourself, 0 to 100, and Eli?
I'm low. I'm a 20. I'm a bad interviewer. I'm bad at interrupting. I interrupted David Letterman like three times last night, right in the middle as he's telling a joke. Eli is much better than me. I'm giving Eli an 80. I'm a 20.
Wow.
Oh, wow. All right, next up, we've always seen your humor in your commercials and what have you. Now we're getting a chance to see your brother. You've got a little different kind of sense of humor. So next up is WIT, general wittiness. Mm. How do you rate yourself and Eli?
I think we're both pretty good in that category. Kurt, as you know, when you grow up in a locker room, you better learn to laugh at yourself. You better learn to have thick skin. And when you grow up with two brothers, I mean, it just multiplies. Being able to take it, being able to give it out. Eli and I like to laugh. We're not afraid to make fun of ourselves. I'm giving both of us a 70.
Nice. Okay. Oh, what does Cooper get in that one out of 100?
Coop's 100. Coop would be 100. 100. He would tell you that. 100. As well. He would tell you that.
I know he would. You and your brother Eli faced a certain quarterback in some fairly memorable games. 0 to 100. This rating is a VTB. Versus Tom Brady. What do you put yourself and what do you give Eli?
This would be the largest gap between me and Eli. Obviously, when you beat Tom Brady in a Super Bowl, only two people know what that's like, Nick Foles and Eli Manning. The fact that Eli did it twice, I'm giving Eli the 100. Me, not so much. I was pretty decent against Tom if we could get him in the AFC Championship, but divisional playoff games and regular season, not so good. I'm giving myself a 10. 10. So,
whoa, 10. Come on. 100 in the self-deprecating. I remember you taking those guys out in Denver in the title game.
Owen Daniels. Just go. Let's go. Yes.
There it is. 20s, 80s, 70, 70, 10, and 100. We're going to take these to Eli and get his thoughts on these in a little bit, Peyton.
No,
in the meantime.
That.
No, we're doing it. We're doing it. We're going to send it to Archie and Olivia and everybody. Peyton, so much fun to have you on. So much fun to watch you on Monday nights. You got Letterman talking about Belichick, sneezing his hand and wiping it on his shirt. And then you got the greatest X's and O's on the planet. Peyton Manning, you are the best. Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks for having me. Keep up the great work. Enjoy y'all's show.
Hey,
Joining us now is one of the most beloved New York athletes in the history of New York sports. A two-time Super Bowl champion, a two-time Super Bowl MVP, a Walter Payton Man of the Year winner, and a future Hall of Famer. He's now taking the world by storm with the Eli Manning Show, as well as the Manning Cast on Monday Night Football. Let's give a big good morning football welcome to an old friend of ours, Mr. Eli Manning.
What's up, Eli? What's up, Eli?
What's up, guys? How you doing? How you doing? Thanks for having me on.
Great.
It is great to have you on. It seems like it's been a while since you retired, but it was really only a couple years ago when you made the official announcement. How has retirement been for you so far, and how are you staying busy?
It's been really good, and just trying to stay busy. I did not accomplish my goal of avoiding TV. I said whatever I do when I retire, I don't want to go on TV. And now I have like my own show. I'm doing Monday Night Football. So I went to the dark side. I went to the media side. Yep. I didn't think that was going to happen, but here I am and having fun with it.
But you're doing it on your terms, which I love. Let's talk about this Eli Manning Show. It premiered just before the Giants retired your jersey. That was back in September. You've had some incredible guests on. Let's take a look at a little clip from this week's episode.
You had checked outside?
Yeah, you ready?
Right now, so hey!
Oh, yeah.
A little wobbling. There it is. Touchdown. All right, you get your one touchdown dance. What are you doing? What's your touchdown dance?
I'm just going to hand it to the ref. It's routine.
There you go.
It's routine. I do this. I don't need to celebrate. That was a good pass. It meant a little short, but, I'll take it.
I mean, Eli, first of all, how does it feel getting critiqued by Kevin Durant?
Hey, that guy's an all-star. I wish I had him as a receiver. I like a 6'11 receiver to run a fade in the end zone. That'd be pretty nice. I don't want to throw him over the middle. I don't think, anybody wants to see someone go for his legs, but I think a fade route on the outside.
Don't break him up.
Yeah, exactly. Let's keep it simple. Just a red zone specialist. But it's been a lot of fun, obviously, getting guys like Kevin Durant to come on. We also play a little Papa Shot. But you'll have to watch the show to see that. So having guests on there, some great people. I co-host with Sean O'Hara, one of my best friends in the world. So we have a lot of fun each day.
What have you learned from making that show?
That it's just a lot of preparation. And, I give a lot more credit, have a lot more respect for all of you on TV. There's a lot of, you kind of have a game plan. You have some things you want to get asked, and all of a sudden, it's like you get way off script, and now you're improvising. But you got to kind of get back to the main focus of the conversation, of the point. And so it's harder than it looks, and a lot of preparation goes into it.
Some of the most fun is like when we get off script, Eli, just as in football. And one of the guys who does that with us is the guy you mentioned, Sean O'Hara. He's a mutual friend of ours. He's at this table all the time. He's obviously really close with you. We know O'Hara goes real deep on the Will Ferrell film catalog, not afraid of flatulence humor, any of that type of stuff. Eli, give us something about O'Hara that the next time he's in, we can play this clip of you talking about him, and maybe we can bust his chops or even embarrass him. What do you got?
Yeah, I think, my favorite story about O'Hara is maybe 05, I think it was 2006. He gets injured. He says he has, athlete's foot. And next thing you know, he's in the hospital. He spends 2 weeks in the hospital. We're checking on him. We don't know what's going on. So finally he gets back. He plays. The next week we win. Monday night we go out to dinner. Got a bunch of us. He brings a new date. It was his nurse from the hospital. I don't think he was really injured. I think he was just trying to get the nerve to ask her out.
Yep.
And now he's married to her now, Amy, and they're great. We love him. But I was like, it's total. I think he faked an injury and faked. Who goes to the hospital for 2 weeks for athlete's foot? But, it worked out. He got a wife out of it.
Maybe not faking it, maybe just milking it a little bit, Eli. All right, let's flip the script a little bit. We had your brother on earlier, and he was announcing the nominees for the Walter Payton Man of the Year. Obviously, you were a recipient of that award. Just tell our viewers what that meant to you.
Yeah, it's one of the great honors that I've ever received, in my career, just because it's really, you're getting an award for something you're not trying to get an award for. It's just, you're just doing the right thing. You're giving back to your community. And so the different charities I've been involved with, Tackle Kids Cancer is one of, you know, the main ones, and helping kids with pediatric cancer. And so, I mean, that's just something that, you know, every time I've gone to a hospital and you see a child that's sick, you just want to do anything possible to try to help them. And, you know, I can, you know, try to make the child smile, but now also I relate to the parents. And, you know, being a father of four kids, and Kurt, you know about that, like when you have a you know, one of your kids that are sick, if they're sick with a cold, you know, you want to do everything to help them, let alone what the parents are going through and the family goes through when you have a child with cancer. So just want to do anything possible, try to get them back healthy, back in school, back to being a kid again. Is so important. So to win the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award was such a great honor, because I wasn't trying to win it. I was just trying to do the right thing. But to be recognized with the great guys like yourself who have won that award in the past and done great things around their communities.
It's an amazing honor. And for 20 years, you were the embodiment of class and represented the Giants organization so well. You're a couple years removed from the team. They're 4-8 right now. We know the quarterback situation's in flux. Besides all the texts I'm getting from Giants fan friends asking if you can go for one more game, I would ask you, what would you like to see from this team over the course of the next few games as we head towards yet another offseason in 2022?
You know, I think just keep grinding. They're playing games close into the fourth quarter. They're not getting blown out. They're competing. It's just, you know, they got to make some plays at critical moments. And you know, you need your stars to step up at those times. And so I hope that they can just, you know, keep working hard, keep putting themselves in situation to be close in those fourth quarters. And then hopefully the guys who are healthy and out there can just, you know, hey, take over a game in those situations. That's what your stars are supposed to do. And so, you know, they need their best players playing at an extremely high level when they're needed.
So, Eli, beyond your own show, you've joined your brother for the Manning cast, and everybody's loving it. Obviously, we love your guys' football knowledge, but maybe more so, we love that we get to go into your living room with you without shoes on and you guys having fun and that banter between the two of you. What has been the most enjoyable part for you of the Manning cast?
You know, I think just getting to hang out with my brother. I don't get to see Peyton all that often. You know, when we were both playing, you know, he was in Indianapolis or Denver. I'm in New York. So, you know, we didn't get Thanksgiving holidays together and Christmas holidays together. So we're always kind of separate. We try to get together in the off season, but to know that, hey, I got, you know, 10 Mondays where I get to hang with him, talk with him a bunch during the week, kind of just coming up with funny stories that we can bring up during the cast. And so it's been fun to kind of go on, you know, Monday nights, get to watch a football game with my brother, which I hardly ever get to do and haven't done in 20 years at least. So you get to do that, watch a football game and make fun of them for 3 hours, you know, on live TV. That's a pretty good scenario. I didn't know that existed when I retired. I didn't know that was a possibility, but I found it and I'm very happy.
Well, one thing that we've always heard about Peyton is how meticulous he was when he played with all the little details. What's he like as a coworker? What's he like being on the same show with him?
Just how I expect them to game plan and to work and to be, you know, extremely prepared. And he sends a lot of voice memos, and I didn't know much about the voicemail. It's different than a voicemail. He does not call me. He just texts me him just talking, a text of him leaving. Sometimes they're 4 or 5 minutes. Sometimes they'll go for like 22 minutes. And also, I'm just sitting in my office, and there's Peyton talking. My wife will walk in and be like, "Who are you talking to?" It's like, is Peyton still talking? What could he possibly be talking about? And, you know, it's just what he sees about the defenses, stories about who he's talked to, what, you know, what he wants to do, what I need to do, who I should talk to, what, you know, perspective I got to look at. So, I mean, he has everything game planned and is telling me exactly what to do. And so I just shake my head, and he's telling me, hey, I got to watch his detail on that he did on Mac Jones. I'm like, just send me a voice memo of what you said in the detail, because I'm not watching all these things you're trying to get me to watch.
It's so perfect. And Eli, some of your former teammates know that that's about the only thing about a smartphone that you don't know how to manipulate. Because I know you have a long history of pranks with smartphones that we'll talk about another time. But Peyton came on. He was on this show like a half hour ago. And we asked him, since he is now a Madden ratings adjuster, we'd had him give himself and you some ratings based on your broadcasting skills. Let's take a look, Eli, if you will. I'll walk you through them, then you can give your thoughts. Interview, he gave himself a 20, you an 80. He says he interrupts Letterman too much. General wittiness, both 70s, a level playing field.
Cooper, and then, what, 100, right?
Yes, out of 100. And then Cooper got 100. And then versus Tom Brady, that rating, himself a 10 and you 100. So, Eli, looking at these categories and ratings, what did he get right and what would you adjust about his adjustments?
You know, I think Peyton, I think his interview skills are better. I think, when you get off script, he adjusts better. He has kind of questions that are unscripted that he has just kind of thought of in his head or he just doesn't tell me he's going to ask. So I think his interview ability is better. His wittiness, I think, I think that both are equal. I think they're both too high. I think they're probably both need to go down a little bit. And, so I think he's, pretty close. But I think he's, he did well versus Brady as well. He likes to talk about Brady a lot. So, and he talks about who he talked to that week a lot. I mean, he's like name dropping like crazy. I can't get over it.
That's it. He spoke to Josh Allen this week. We learned that last night. He said it a couple times. We heard it.
He kept saying it. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, all right, I see the jersey. I see that your son had a Josh Allen jersey on, and he used his name for his flag football team. I'm like, he's a big Josh Allen fan. Who knew?
That's cool. That's it. And this is cool for us.
So
Eli,
cool.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being a good sport. And if you got one more game, there's a trip out to Los Angeles for the Chargers this week.
Let's go.
It would be one game. One more. I don't know. No?
Yeah.
One more. I don't know.
That's it.
Great.
Just like I said.
You're not coming out of retirement for three passes. You're not doing it for three passes. Tell them you need 43 passes, Eli, if you're coming back.
Kurt's on one.
I can do that.
Yeah. You could do three pass attempts. Thanks so much, Eli. We have the real Kurt Warner here at the breakfast table with us for one last 20 minutes. And then we have another.
Here we go.
The star of American Underdog, Zachary Levi, joining us. Don't go anywhere. Let's talk American Underdog.
Go ahead, Kurt. Tell me.
Tell you what.
Why a team worth $800 million should put you in the driver's seat. You're too old to be a rookie, so why in the world would I give you this shot?
All my life, I've defined myself through sports. I've always come up empty.
Coach, I can win for you.
You need to start thinking about life after football, son.
I was meant for something more.
Green went down hard and is not getting up.
I wasn't ready for it. But I am now.
You were born for this.
Something special about you, son.
Destiny.
The wants of the underdogs. You want to prove that?
I have goosebumps. I am pumped to see this movie. You can check it out, of course, on Christmas Day. And joining us now, one of the most talented men in Hollywood. You might know him from Chuck, Shazam, or as Flynn Rider. Mm. But he is now taking on a very tough role, starring as Kurt Warner in American Underdog, The Kurt Warner Story. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning, football, to Mr. Zachary Levi.
Oh, yeah. What's up, Zach?
What's up? Good morning, everybody. Good morning. How are we feeling?
What's up? Wonderful. Great. I know it's early on the West Coast. Thanks for hanging out with us. I like your Aviator Nation jacket you have on. Let's talk about this movie. Yeah, we just saw you are playing my co-host of the day, Kurt Warner, in his biopic. What an incredible, inspirational story. What was your reaction when you got the call or you found out, you got the voice note maybe, Zachary, that you were going to take on the role of Kurt?
Well, it was great. I mean, honestly, the Irwin brothers who directed this fine film, we were already kind of collaborating on some other stuff. And then The role came around. I was available for it. They really wanted me to, you know, step into these very iconic shoes. And it was amazing. I mean, I watched all this stuff go down in real time. And I was very inspired then. And I was even more inspired after having read the script and seeing all of the other, you know, real life stuff that I think a lot of people just aren't privy to. We all know the bullet points. We all know that Kurt was an undrafted rookie and, you know, didn't get into league until later and was stocking shelves and played arena football. But I don't think a lot of people know all of the details, you know, all of the relationship between he and Brenda, the relationship between he and his and their kids and how that all galvanized into this beautiful family unit and how that ultimately, I think, kind of allowed Kurt, and Kurt can speak to this, but, you know, become a better man, a better leader, a better quarterback. Arena made him a faster quarterback. And so then, you know, to jump into this role and get to bring all of that, this, you know, this football movie. I mean, it's an American underdog, obviously about Kurt, but Brenda's an underdog. Their son Zach is an underdog. And it's really, you know, 25% football, 75% family and relationship and drama and scraping change out of your car doors to put gas in the tank, which I think is something that we can all relate to. So it's a very powerful story, you know, and again, one that I think so many of us were inspired by watching it go down. But there's so much more to the story. I think it's so much more that's relatable to the audience.
That's a great pitch. We'll be there. Everyone should be there. You know, you mentioned the bullet points of Kurt's career. Everybody does know them. We here have the advantage of seeing past the bullet points. Now, Kurt is this really classy, family-oriented person, but Kurt's got an edge to him now. Like, Kurt is very competitive. He can get pissed off. If the Patriots only throw three passes and win, he is offended by it. Like, let's talk about the character of Kurt Warner. How do you get into character as this great guy, but this very competitive athlete?
Listen, well, first of all, Kurt, take it easy. Look, Mac is still a rookie, and it was very windy, okay? Let the team run the ball. They won the game. What is wrong with you? He's always been competitive. He's always been competitive. This is no new thing. I mean, this was the grit and the fortitude that ultimately got him into the NFL. He didn't give up. He did not give up. And that's, you know, ultimately, if God gives you a dream when you're a kid, I think we all get those dreams. Unfortunately, the world beats it out of you. You know, sometimes it's your parents, sometimes it's your schooling or lack thereof or whatever. But he's always been a pretty salty cat. He's an incredible man. I'm super honored that I get to play him. But he's an incredibly salty competitor. There's no doubt about that.
I mean, salty. That's kind of a so strong good. Word. I've never thought of myself as salty. But all right, here's my question for you.
You can get salty.
More intimidate.
Kurt.
more intimidating playing someone that's still alive, real life character that has to critique you on a daily basis, or playing someone that was a pretty good quarterback that the rest of the world is going to critique you on when this movie comes out?
Well, it's in this case, it's both, isn't it? I mean, I had to play a pretty good quarterback, pretty good to the extent that you made it into the Hall of Fame. And everybody else gets to look at all that footage and compare me against that. But also, you know, yeah, you know, you were there. You were there on set half the time, you and Brenda. And there's a lot of there's expectations there. You know, not just the expectations to feel like we're doing you and Brenda and your family story justice, but also that, you know, look, I'm not Daniel Day-Lewis playing Abraham Lincoln, okay? That guy's dead a long time ago. Nobody can compare the two of them. By the way, Daniel Day-Lewis, fantastic actor and fantastic work. I get to play this knucklehead who's literally still on live television where everybody can just compare me to him. So the expectations are a little higher, I think.
Yeah, look, we loved you in Shazam. Obviously, Kay mentioned Chuck, and then this thing here is coming out. But when you're filming the sports movie, you're also working with Dennis Quaid and Anna Paquin. Like, on set, what was the vibe as you're living out the Kurt Warner story and the Brenda Warner story, and you're also with these very accomplished actors and actresses and getting your job done as well?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it was awesome. I mean, the whole thing happened very fast. You know, the pandemic obviously kind of screwed everything up in everyone's industries, ours included, in Hollywood. And but once the movie kicked off and once we all knew it was happening, it happened very quickly. Anna and I didn't get to meet each other until basically we were on set shooting scenes together. I mean, but, you know, by and large. And Dennis, I mean, you know, who I've been a fan of since I was a kid watching Inner Space. I mean, that was just such a trip, yes. getting the sheer screen time with him. But both incredibly lovely people. Really, honestly, I mean, I feel like I just feel very blessed. I feel like the whole thing felt very fated. I felt God's fingerprints were all over it. I felt like I got to step into playing, you know, honestly, not just a great role, but, you know, portraying a really great man. And Brenda, I think, was, you know, so greatly portrayed by Anna. And Anna and I just jumped in. We trusted each other. It's like a big trust fall. We just all jumped in and we gave it our all. And she's such a pro. And you know, Dennis is such a pro. And it felt good. It was a struggle. We were shooting in Oklahoma in the middle of winter during the middle of the pandemic when everybody's in all this, you know, face masks and all that stuff and face shields. And I mean, all that stuff disconnects you from your cast and crew a bit. But it was still, I think it all felt like, okay, I think we're making something special here. And having now seen the film, I'm so proud of what we all accomplished.
We cannot wait to watch it. And Zach, we cannot let you go. There are several families amongst the cast and crew at Good Morning Football who have children in their homes who go around screaming, Shazam! So tell us in your best 30 seconds, we know the sequel's coming in 2023. Get us excited about what's coming down the road without blowing the whole thing. Tell us.
Without blowing the whole thing, right? That's the trick. Look, I'm so grateful that I get to play this role. I'm basically just a huge man child anyway. So playing a superhero that's really a child inside, chef's kiss. But I think the first one, we stepped into something really special. We created something that I think it really resonated with people, particularly families, like you're saying. There's so much heart. There's so much humor in it. And in the second one, we got more time and more budget, and we were able to make, I think, an even better version of what we did the first time, which we're very proud of. You can put a little bit more into it. And sometimes, oftentimes, you know, with sequels, people, it's all about like bigger and better and bigger and better. And this isn't about bigger and better. It's just more about, I think, being able to, everyone, look, we all know our characters more. Everyone's back from the original. Plus, we had these incredible villains in Lucy Liu and Helen Mirren, who I got to work with, who are so dope. So, Dame Helen Mirren. I mean, guys, it doesn't really get better than that. So hopefully everybody's very excited when the movie comes out. And everybody goes out to see it.